This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing, the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins at Conquest 3 and Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. Hi Pete, how are you mate?
Yeah, I'm good mate, how are you?
I'm very well mate, it's been a busy week. I think the culmination of it was me having a chat with the Secretary of State, Therese Coffey, talking about mentoring circles and helping young people, trying to get them back into work and all the rest of it. I had to do it virtually because she was in Marylebone Job Centre. So that was quite exciting speaking to her.
That's a big one. What with that and you hanging out with, who was that MP who had coronavirus the other day?
She's taken the role from Alok Sharma, my good friend Alok Sharma, who's also...
That's it, Alok Sharma, he's the one who had the virus, yeah.
He's in Boris's cabinet as well, so she's now taken that role on regarding DWP and mentoring circles, so I was speaking with her.
Wow.
So that was quite good. Doing some good stuff, mate. We need to...
Well, it sounds like you've done some more high-profile stuff than me, because I've had a week where I haven't really done much in terms of markets and stuff, and the weather's been a bit sort of all over the place, hasn't it? And I've done a few bits of tinkering in the garden, but I've had a fairly mellow kind of week, really.
I think what it is, Pete, is that we've been spoilt, mate. We've been spoilt with the weather right up until the point where it's meant to be summer. You know what I mean? So we've done May, which was really, really good, you know, 90% hot, you know, really, really good weather. And then we had June, which was okay, fairly, fairly good. And now it's like July, the week of July begins when it's like, this is summer, you know.
Yeah.
And the weather's gone.
And it's just as the pubs are allowed to open and they're supposed to use gardens and whatever, it's like, yeah, it'd be nice if we had the weather to go with it.
It would be nice, except, you know, as you know, Leicester's in lockdown, yeah.
Yeah, you live in Leicester, don't you?
I live in Leicester, but I don't live in Leicester. I live in Leicestershire, right?
Are you in the zone?
I am not in the zone, Pete, right? However, I'm speaking to some friends who run some pubs, and they're saying they're not going to open, right? They're in the...
Outside, yeah, I've heard a few saying
outside,
that.
Outside of the zone, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to open, and it's not about being in comradeship in arms of all these, you know, people that run pubs, yeah? It's about the fact that they know that people in the city are going to go, sod it, I'm off. I'm going to go 3 miles down the road or across the road to the pub, which is across the boundary line, and go to that pub and watch the football and have a few beers. They're going, it ain't worth the hassle.
You know I mean? Heard someone on the radio today, and they were Republican, and they were saying, we don't want to risk, you know, our customers. We don't want to risk our staff. They said we'd rather just leave it a couple of weeks or whatever and then assess the situation then, which I think is probably a sensible stance. But you can imagine these publicans are chomping at the bit to get open, I would imagine.
They are. I mean, my good friend Billy runs 12 pubs and a brewery and a bowling alley. And he's, you know, the business has lost a fortune. I don't know how he's going to make it through the next 12 months, to be fair. And he's and he's on furloughed staff. Prepped, got the brewery up and running, yeah. Got all these staff ready to launch again on what was going to be yesterday / for the weekend as well. And then he's on the radio talking about, what do I do? You know, and he's put all these measures in place to make it safer than the supermarket, and he can't open his pub. So, you know, there's lots of businesses going to be struggling and continue to struggle. And this 2 week window of let's look and see what happens in Leicester, it may not be 2 weeks, it may be longer than that. And the problem is, given the numbers and the places that they're talking about, there's going to be other places in the UK which have an additional lockdown if the numbers don't reduce.
Well, it's interesting. On that subject, actually, mate, before I do it, you wanted to talk about Mellow Virtual.
I did, because part of the conversation with the Therese Coffey, Secretary of State, was talking about Mellow London, which we both attended previously, and David Streder was kind enough to allow me to bring to Mellow London in November a group of young people. And they had a fantastic time when they met the CEOs and leaders of businesses, listed fund managers, etc., etc., and they had one-to-ones with them to see about opportunities regarding work, engagement, mentoring, coaching, or any sort of support. And they had a fantastic time. So I was speaking to the Secretary of State about that and speaking about what the work that David does and about Mello Virtual that's coming up on the 10th and the 11th of July. So I spoke to her about that.
So that's next Friday and Saturday.
It's next Friday and Saturday. So that was absolutely phenomenal speaking to her about that, because just to tell you, ladies and gents, one of the, you know, we're going to break this news here on the Twin Peaks podcast. Peter and I, as in Peter, the main man, wheelie dealer, we have been asked to present and do another live Twin Peaks investing podcast at Mello Virtual. So Peter and I will be presenting and doing a live podcast on Friday afternoon, to a time to be confirmed, on the 10th. And we're going to do a similar sort of thing we did the first time, because this is going to be our third live Twin Peaks at Mello.
So is it our third?
It's going to be our third, Pete.
I suppose it is. Yeah, you're right. Good Lord. I forgot all about the second one we did.
Yeah, because that's because you almost missed it, Pete. Yeah.
No, I think that was because it was so stressful that I sort of blanked it from my mind.
No, mate, you haven't taken the phone and I had to drag you into the room. That's what happened. Oh. I remember it well. So that's
going to be coming back to me now like a flashback, like been in Vietnam or something.
So... Yeah. So we're going to be there on the 10th regarding the Mello Virtual. David's kindly invited us back to do that. So please, please, please attend. Please look out for the offers that David has regarding the remaining few tickets that are available to attend. Let me just tell you guys and ladies from around the world that you can attend this virtually, no matter where you are in the world. So the beauty of it is, you've got some...
What, even in Ukraine?
Even in the Ukraine, Morocco, Israel, where we've got some people listening to us right now. You've got Sir Peter Perrier-Gray, who is the Managing Partner and Chief Executive Officer of the Wellcome Trust. Yeah? You've got Sir Martin Sorrell of WPP fame, who's now the Executive Chairman of S4 Capital PLC.
He's going to SFOR, isn't it?
SFOR is the main.
Yeah,
the main
TIDM code. Yeah.
We've got a lovely lady who I absolutely adore called Annabelle Brody Smith, who's the communications director of the AIC. She's going to be speaking.
What's the AIC?
Association of Investment Companies, Pete. Investment.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, yeah. You've got Alex Denny, head of Investment Trust of Fidelity.
Yeah.
You've got John Barron, who you very much know, Pete, from Investors Chronicle.
Oh, we know of John Barron. I mean, he's actually an MP, isn't he? But he writes in Investors Chronicle every month or something. I don't think he's every week. Oh, no, he is every week. He's always in there.
Is there a lot?
Good column.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got Leon Boros going to be there. Everyone knows.
Oh, Leon, brilliant.
ISA millionaire.
Actually, mate, we need to get a couple of Twitter handles here. Leon Boros is at Boros10, and he's definitely someone everyone should be following. And David Streder is at Carmen's Fella.
That's correct.
So Carmen's Fella, Fella.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got those individuals all going to be there. They're the biggies. They're the big hitters, anyway. There's loads more, yeah? And you've got lots of... listed companies. I'm just going to run through a few here for you guys, ladies and gents. Just bear with me a second. So some of the companies are already registered and on the website at the moment include On the Market, Fidelity International, Alliance Trust, Caledonia Mining Corp, IdeaGen, Newmark Security, Polar Capital, which is a large trust, asset management company, Belvoir Group, Avation PLC, which I know you love, Pete. Yeah.
Oh, AVAP, yeah.
Yeah, you've been in there.
I hold it.
You hold it, absolutely. You've been holding it for a while. International Biotech Trust.
IBT, yeah.
Yeah, FinCap, Cambridge Cognition, Zote Foams, Litigation Capital Management. Yeah, there's quite a few more companies there to behold, and I'm sure the list is going to expand before.
Oh, some interesting ones in that list, yeah.
So look out for those individuals and companies, and get your tickets. You know, get yourself there. You can be there. You can be anywhere in the world and watch this this feast of investors' insight and knowledge, which is going to be shared by numerous individuals and listed companies virtually. Okay, Pete.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. The other thing we wanted to mention was thank you to everybody who subscribed to the channels on, you know, for Twin Peaks Investing. It's brilliant. Thank you. And it, you know, if you haven't subscribed, then it's, you know, it's free to subscribe. Just hit the subscribe button, get the app, all that kind of stuff, and then you'll know when new episodes are coming out. But we do them every couple of weeks, don't we? Something like that.
We do. I mean, the beauty of it is now is that we're on a couple of different platforms, but essentially, if you can find us on SoundCloud, you can find us on Audioboom, iTunes, Spotify. You know, you're there. You know, Overcast we're on as well now.
Yeah.
So find us, and if you're listening to this, whatever your, you know, platform you're using, just subscribe, please, because we want to get out there and get the numbers up. And also, the beauty of it is that if you're liking it, somebody that you know is probably liking this podcast as well. So it's all about sharing the knowledge.
Excellent. Mate, just go quickly back. We were on that virus subject. I know it's very tedious, but I just want to throw in quickly. Before we started this call, so we're recording this at, what is it, nearly 6 o'clock on Friday the 3rd of July in the evening. I just watched the you know, the daily briefing with Boris and whatever. And the latest numbers, and this is ONS numbers, is that 1 in 2,200 people in the UK are infected at the moment. They said that it's shrinking. The number of infected people is shrinking from between 2% to 5% per day. And that's across the country, obviously in Leicester and in some other places it's higher. The R number across the country is now 0.7 to 0.9, so below one.
Yeah, that's interesting, mate. The thing for me, Pete, going forward, is the fact that what they've said is that, you know, and I'm not sure when this will come into being, is that they're going to outsource, Pete. They're going to outsource the testing, yeah, similar to what they've said in America. So you're going to have private companies doing the testing going forward. I'm not sure what that's going to mean. Whether there's going to be more testing, or what? But the likelihood is that going forward, more and more people are going to be wanting to be tested because they want to go to work, or they want to protect their companies or their families. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the UK has said it's going to award COVID-19 contracts worth 5 billion to private bidders. Yeah.
Is that for both sorts of testing, you know, the antibody and the antigen or whatever
it is? That's for every single test that they're going to allow for. Yeah.
So that includes the one that says if you've had it before, so there's a possibility you may have some kind of immunity.
As far as I know, Pete, it's going to cover all the tests. You have to. Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be caveats there and asterisks everywhere.
Oh, to the hell, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But some of these companies that are, I mean, I want to talk a bit later on about the winners. We've had 6 months now. We've had a 6 month window. We've done the June. We've had 6 solid months of the market. It's been extremely volatile. Some companies have actually done well, and Pete and I spoke before about all of you guys and ladies looking at your portfolios, making sure they're as resilient as possible, and maybe look out for companies that could win in this COVID environment or do extremely well, or at least not do badly. So I'm going to talk about that later on, but invariably some of the winners are related to COVID tested, medtech, healthcare, so on and so forth, biopharma. And they've done exceptionally well. So
health's been an incredible sector to be in. I mean, I've got a lot of health exposure, and I'm so pleased I have, because it's pretty much without exception, they've all done pretty well, really, or at least held their own.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can come back to those later on, Pete. So,
let's
run with what you want to run with to start with.
Oh, well, a quick one I want to throw in, which is sort of related to this subject.
Yep.
So we're recording this on Friday, the 3rd of July. this morning, when I look through the RNSs, because what I do every morning, I go through the RNS statements, usually at about, say, 8:15, I start ripping into them. I can't be doing with getting up at 7 like everyone else does. I read through the RNS statement, you know, pretty much for companies that I consider to be decent quality companies. I don't really waste my time with a lot of the rubbish. And one that struck me that I read quickly was Land, L-A-N-D, Land Securities. And what was interesting here, it's not that I'm particularly interested in Land Securities as a company. They've got a lot of retail stuff, you know, retail. They're a commercial property company, huge, massive. They've got loads of retail shopping malls and stuff. Anyway, what was interesting was they said in the 2 weeks that shops, normal shops, have been allowed to open, the footfall was 60% of what it was last year at this week, yeah? But they said the like-for-like sales were 80% of the same week last year. And then the other interesting thing is they said that the average spend per customer was up 22%. Now, it could be that it's just a bit of a boom for a couple of weeks because people have been locked away forever and they've just had the excitement of going to a shopping mall. Or maybe, you know, it's a sign that, you know, maybe retail has got more life in it than we all assume.
I really don't know the answer to that, Pete. I mean, if I was to be, you know, an old man syndrome here, I'd say that a lot of people have been trapped in their houses. They've not been able to go shopping. The lockdown is easing up in various different places. And people are going like that, oh, the summer's coming. Let me get out there and crack on with buying stuff for the summer. Which, you know, because they've been sitting in the baggies at home, a lot of people that haven't been working, and they want to fresh up their wardrobe, you know.
But the funny thing is, they've been buying online as well, because as we know, Boohoo and that have been doing really well. So it's a weird situation.
It's a weird one. I mean, the thing is, we've seen the situation with the Intu almost going out of business.
Intu was a very troubled business even before the virus, wasn't it?
It was, as is Amazon, but I think what it is that they need this injection, don't they? You know, they need to have some good news. And if the footfall's there, more, it means that at least their tenants are going to be doing okay for a little while. And the fact that they're able to say, you know, that they're planning to reinstate dividend payments later in the year, that's going to, you know, boost, you know, the viewpoint from various shareholders to think, actually, it might be worthwhile catching this whilst it's at a discount.
Which company said they're going to reintroduce dividends?
Land Securities are talking about.
Oh, I didn't read that bit. I just skimmed through it quickly and I saw these footfall things and thought, wow, that's really surprising.
Yeah, I mean,
that's interesting.
They're basically saying that, you know, we feel that we're in a financially robust position.
Wow.
You know? And a lot of the other ones have been saying, you know, we're getting 50%, 30% of the rents. We're still trying to collect our rents here. People say that they don't want to pay it and so on and so forth. So if they're that financially strong, let's hope they're not going to be around the corner at some point saying they need to do a fundraise.
Well, yeah, isn't it? I guess, you know, they're at the sort of more quality end of the retail because they have like some pretty, you know, decent shopping centres, like the one I think of is Gunwharf Quays in Portsmouth, because my mate Martin used to work for them. And you know, I think of that, and it's a real, you know, destination shopping centre. You know, it's absolutely the kind of things to own if you're going to be in retail. So, but then to be, you know, into had a lot of good stuff, but it hasn't helped then.
It hasn't. I mean, unfortunately, I think we spoke about this before, and I attend a forum in London, which we've been doing virtually for the past couple of months, and it's got lots of economists and real estate specialists in there. And sometimes we get the odd fund manager and senior bod in various large entities around London. And they're basically saying all of these behemoth sort of landowners, landlords that own all these property retail big box places, they really need to think about the current properties that they've got and the future builds. And they've got to be multiple asset properties. And by that they mean retail outlets, Pete, dentist, a cinema complex.
Oh, dentists are in trouble, aren't they? I keep hearing some really bad stories about dentists on the news.
Yeah, so a gym, yeah? But more importantly, some of these buildings that they've got the big boxes on have also got to have housing with it. So on top of the retail outlet, have some flats. You know what I mean? Build some houses up, build some apartments on top of it so that you've got that income stream all the time because you've got tenants that are there 24/7.
You've got the diversity in the area. Yeah,
absolutely. But you've got that landmass that's been taken up with the retail outlet. Why not build on top of it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you've got revenue coming in from people that are renting that property or living in that property. So you sell the flats, you've got the retail outlets underneath, but people can still generate income.
And like you say, you could hopefully when dentists get back to normal, you can have dentists in there.
Yeah.
You can have like GPs, primary health properties, PHP, and the doctor's surgeries and stuff. You could have them in there. So, yeah, no, it makes good sense. Yeah.
You've got to have multiple use. It can't just be shop. You know, I mean, this may never happen again, Pete, in another 50 years, this sort of lockdown everywhere.
God, I hope not.
But have it so that your properties are generating money all the time, regardless of scenarios.
Yeah. Well, that's the real art of diversification, isn't it? So that you're sort of positioned whatever happens.
Absolutely, because this COVID thing has sent people, you know, doolally in a sense of they've planned for everything but this.
Yeah.
And this event has actually smashed people's pensions, businesses, lifestyles. Everything has been thrown into the fire because we've got, you know, zillions of people now unemployed and potentially not going to be re-employed regardless of what happens in the next 3 months or 6 months. And that's the devastation of what's happened here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's that paradox. And I think we've got sort of two types of groups. You've got the people like you've just mentioned that are really going to suffer now. And it's just appalling for them. And then you've got other people who've been sat at home, getting their furlough money, not really spending money. They're keeping their jobs, whatever. They are cashed up. And they're not particularly thinking they're going to go on holiday, but they are interested in buying new cars. They are interested in getting to the shops. And I think, you know, there's that sort of dichotomy of, it's always the same with these kind of things, isn't it? There's always winners and losers.
There's always winners and losers, Pete. And that's a nice segue to me talking about the winners over the past 6 months, Pete.
So yeah, let's do that.
I'm going to run through some of these. And I know some of you, ladies and gents, wherever you are in the world, have got some of these. Some of these stocks we've spoken about before, some of them we've never mentioned. Of the stocks I'm going to speak about, I don't hold any. So congratulations to all those that own these stocks, right? So FTSE 100 winner, right? Top of the tree over 6 months. Ocado. We've spoken about Ocado before.
Wow. Right? OCDO, yeah.
OCDO. Online, distributing, delivering retail, groceries and more. And it's been going rock solid, you know, throughout the lockdown, year to date. It's almost like everything just fell into place for it because, you know, the lockdown meant that so many different companies needed to distribute their goods. And Ocado has thrived. So that's up 62% from the stats that I had earlier on this afternoon. Yeah, year to date, six months.
So what's your thinking on where Ocado goes from here?
I think what will happen, Pete, and what they have been trying to do, and they've got relationships in America, they're going to build upon this and sell their infrastructure situation to other retailers. So essentially they're not just a distribution chain, they're enabling the software and the tech and the wherewithal for other retailers to take advantage of the online growth that's going forward. Yeah,
it's more about their technical know-how, isn't
technical
it really?
Know-how and infrastructure and distribution chains. That's what they're going to do. So whether that be in Canada, whether that be in France or Germany, that's what they're looking to build on now. So you're going to hear about these behemoth contracts that they've had with X, Y, and Z. I think the more recent, and that's where they're going to go.
Is there where are they in terms of like balance sheet and forecast earnings and stuff? Any sense of that, or is it still loss making and needs loads of capital?
I'm not sure about the need lots of capital, Pete. They're still on the cusp of the expectations that people were looking at for them.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. But they're definitely in a better position to where they were two or three years ago where everyone just poo-pooed them.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. And no doubt about it.
And said that they never stood a chance.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one of those companies, really, that has been unloved, underappreciated, and now it's one of those companies where if you had invested in it, you'd have made a chunk of change.
Yeah. Yeah?
So the demand is there, and everything's been aligned for them to do well. And now it's about execution.
I think it's quite an interesting one. I mean, it's probably as it is, it's a bit high risk for me because you know me, I'm as boring as hell and I want really safe stuff. But I must say it's something that, you know, would almost tempt me into putting a small bit of money into it and just having it as a long-term hold, possibly adding when you get more confidence about it, that kind of thing. It's certainly interesting.
It's a stock, Pete, whereby if you believe in the technology and you believe that they can continue to execute.
I think their tech is good, isn't it?
Yeah. And you believe that if you believe they're going to execute, then you've got a possibility that they'll do extremely well. You know, they are now, if you class them as a tech retailer, yeah, they've got a market cap heading towards 15 billion, right?
Yeah, it's getting meaty.
Got a turnover of nearly 12 billion. Yeah?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I've got the turnover right there, but I'll come back on that. But they're getting there, and this is the beauty of what a good tech company can do. They can be overpriced for forever, yeah. And you think they're loss making. When they're going to get there. But when they execute on what they're actually doing, eventually, the stock price can absolutely soar. So.
Well, maybe the obvious one is Tesla, isn't it? Well, yeah, Tesla, I almost didn't want to say it, but I got to say it. Tesla, yeah. TSLA. I mean, good lord.
Tesla, Amazon was loss making for ages because I kept reinvesting all the money in there. You know, so yeah, that's just one of those, Pete.
You've just
got to be. Where are they going to go? What they're going to do next? Just keep an eye out on that one.
Again, it's one where you wouldn't put your whole portfolio on it, but to have like 3-4% in it might be sensible.
Well, yeah. If you're looking at long term, then there's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
The craziest thing about it is now is obviously it's got a bigger market cap than Marks and Spencer's, which has got absolutely spanked.
Yeah, but Marks and Spencer's is just so horrible, isn't it? I mean, it is. I mean, that company just drives me mental, to be honest, because I just think there were so many things they could have done with that company, and they've just basically thrown it all away, I think.
Yeah, they've had a difficult time. You know, I mean,
for 20 years. Well, 20 years of difficult time.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Morrisons that have been around for decades, and that's, you know, they'll say it's about, what, in the top six of retailers for groceries, etc.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got a market cap now of 4.5 billion, Pete. Yeah, so Ocado's already, you know, nearly three times the size of that.
Incredible.
It's amazing what happens with tech, and which is why I love my tech company so much, because
when they do
the right thing and they grow, the old school just get left behind.
Of course, with their tech, they can go global. It's a lot harder for Morrisons to go global.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Massive execution problems there.
Oh, God, yeah. And competitors.
Yeah. I want to throw a bit of a curveball here, because this is not a tech. This is not a stock. It's an actual fund, the second biggest winner, right? So one that lots of people that we know that are shrewd, sharp, bright, you know what I mean, have got in their portfolio. And it's Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, SMT, Pete. Yeah,
SMT, yeah.
It's an investment trust that invests in listed and unlisted equities and makes investments to achieve an objective of maximizing total returns, up 44%, Pete.
Wow. But it's really a tech fund. I mean, if you buy SMT, you're basically buying the NASDAQ.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to touch on that in a little bit more detail, Pete. And you've already mentioned one company it holds, right? The largest holdings in this. So you are buying a tech fund, essentially, right? So
yeah.
You've got Tesla, 11%+ of its portfolio. Amazon, 10%+ of its portfolio. Illumina, 6.3%, Tencent, 6%, Alibaba, 5%, ASML Holdings, 3% plus, Delivery Hero, which I've never heard of, 3%, Netflix, 3%, Kering, 2.6%. Ferrari, 2.4%. That's the largest holding.
That's a real quality there.
Some absolute smashers there, mate, that have absolutely
done. Interesting that Kering, whatever you call them, yeah, and Ferrari are obviously both, you know, luxury goods, quality luxury goods, as opposed to tech. But yeah, it's interesting they're holding those.
Well, there you go. So you don't always have to buy the individual companies. You can buy a nice fund and let them do all the hard work for you, which I know a lot of you ladies and gents do. You like your funds. You don't have to sweat the individual stock and be worried and paranoid every morning. What's going to happen to it? Is it going to be up and panic and have all that emotional stress? Let the fund manager do the work for you. You know,
oh, absolutely.
You know, and if you can find a good fund manager, or a good fund company that's consistently doing well over 3 years, 5 years, not just the hot fund of the day, but something that's done well over 3 months, three years, 5 years and 10 years, then you're going to do exceptionally well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got PCT, Polar Capital Technology, which plays very similar space to SMT. And yeah, it's done lovely. Been great.
Well, there you go. Consistently performing, mate. And we've talked about FANGs before, Pete. And, you know, a lot of these tech-related trusts have done exceptionally well and outperformed the FTSE 250, you know, percentage-wise, in the past 6 months. They've done exceptionally well. Yes, they had a dip as well, like everybody else in March and April, but they've recovered and have done really well for people that have invested in them, and even better for those that have held it beyond, you know, 2020, 2019 and beyond. They've done exceptionally well.
Actually, I just realised, I should have mentioned, I've only held PCT for 2 or 3 years, yeah? But before that, I had... It was at some stage Henderson Global Technology Unit Trust.
Right.
And what I did was I sold out of the unit trust and switched into the investment trust, partly for administration reasons, because it meant that I got the tech exposure into my ISA, because I had the Henderson Unit Trust outside of my... Well, it was outside of an ISA wrapper, I think. I can't remember. No, actually, no, it was in an ISA, but it was outside and it wasn't... You know, it wasn't an investment trust, it was a unit trust. But I'd held that for like 20 years or something. And you know, apart from getting absolutely spanked into the dot-com days, its recovery has been incredible over 20 years. So, you know, I was very happy holding it all that time.
Pete, if you've held that all that time, you've done exceptionally well, mate. So congratulations. I mean, this is the beauty.
Well, my screw-up was buying it on the dot-com boom, obviously. Well, but I didn't really have a clue what I was doing.
Yeah, but this is the beauty of learning, Pete, and the beauty of learning is that you're able to then recover that, you know.
Oh, and a million times more, yeah.
And invest in the highs and the lows of that, you know, pound cost averaging or whatever you've done, and you've done exceptionally well now. So that's, you know, this is learning, mate. Some people learn, some people don't.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting as well, because it really brings home the buy and hold thing, because I'd figured out, you know, even 20 odd years ago when I was pretty stupid, I'd sort of figured out that technology would probably do well over time and health would probably do well over time. So I had exposure to funds in both of those, because I had Framlington Health, and I've since switched that to WWH, Worldwide Healthcare. And they've just been brilliant, because, and they're just, I think health is exactly like tech. It's the kind of thing you can just buy it and hold it, because over time, you know, there's always going to be plenty of demand for health and new treatments and growing population and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. And this is why a lot of core portfolios have got, you know, GSK in there, AstraZeneca in there.
Yeah.
And health funds, like you say, you know, health and tech are going to do extremely well in the new environment as well.
Should do, shouldn't they?
You know, and going on to the next thing that's going to do well in this environment, and depending on what happens to real GDP and inflation, over the next 6 months to 2 years, gold stocks. I've had loads of people sending me messages and DM saying, "Oh, you've got any gold stocks, Pete? Are you involved in that stock?" And this,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And the one that's absolutely smashed it, which most people, I think, haven't really looked at, and this goes back into our sort of semi-discriminative behaviours regarding overseas companies. It's a FTSE 250 company, Pete. It's called Petropavlovsk. Yeah, it's a Russian
stock. Petropavlovsk. What's the code for that?
POG, right?
POG, yeah.
Russian gold miner, Pete. Yeah.
No, I'm shaking.
Yeah, that's all you need to know. I'm not going to say any more. Yeah. So it operates in gold mines in Russia. It's done exceptionally well, Pete. 6 months, that stock is up 107%.
Wow. Yeah,
in 6 months. So, and I know some people held that, some people have started trimming it, and some people have sold out of it, but it's had a fantastic run over the past 6 months. Other gold miners have done exceptionally well as well. But the star of the 250 and the winner of the 250 is POG, up 107% when I looked at it earlier this afternoon. So
that's the one that used to be Peter Hambro Gold, didn't it?
Absolutely. And he went, and Peter Hambro and the company and Peter Hambro himself went through all kinds of pain regarding, you know, I won't go into it here because I don't want, you know, certain people to get into my accounts. But it was a difficult time for all concerned. And any minute now it could be another difficult time for them. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you told
me, this is one of my issues with POG. And the reason that I doubt I would ever buy POG is that however I felt about gold, yeah, I mean, I see gold as something you buy for safety and as a safe haven and whatever, yeah? And my issue is that you're buying a safe haven, but then you're buying your exposure in Russia, where Mr. Putin could any second just say, right, I'm taking all the gold mines. And I just have a real problem with that. I would never buy somewhere in a jurisdiction, anything in a place like Russia. No way.
And that's exactly what I was avoiding saying, Pete. But now you've said...
Oh, sorry, I've just blown it. And we're now both going to get assassinated.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Pete.
We've had it, mate. Better change your identity and stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes. Sorry, folks. There we go again. Pete's put me in the literal verbal...
Oh, mate, everyone listening to this is dead as well, by the way. You know, he's going to get all of us now.
Pete, stop.
Let's move on to the next one.
Right. The next winner, the second winner of the FTSE 250. And you've touched on this, Pete, because people are buying stuff and wanting to do things online. And it's a bizarre stock for me, right? Because it's another stock which I think I'm not alone in here, folks, making the mistake. And I wrote this stock off. And it jumped on my timeline so many times, looked at it, came up on my filters and my research things. And I went, no, 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 and no, right? This stock is up 103% when I looked at it this afternoon. Whoa. In 6 months, it's up 103%, Pete, right? This stock is AO World, ticker AO dot, the online retailer of electrical products. This
Incredible.
Is selling washing machines, right? Dishwashers, toasters, air straighteners for those, all your lovely ladies out there. Yeah. Blenders for the people that like to health drinks and all the rest of it, and other electrical items. And it's absolutely smashed it as a retailer. I'll get my numbers correct. 103% in 12 months, 65% in 6 months. Smashed it.
It's like Ocado, isn't it? It's one of those where if you have your Warren Buffett head on, you're never going to buy it. But if you've got your more adventurous hat on, then, you know, people who bought it have done brilliant, and fair play to them. But it's still quite shocking.
Shocking in what sense?
Well, because I think, again, it's one that it doesn't make a profit. It's had some difficult years. You know, it's still quite risky, I would say. I mean, chances are it's the right place, right time, all that good stuff. And, of course, it's not encumbered like Dixon. What's Dixon's called this week? Dixon's car phone, is it, or something?
Yeah.
What, is that what it's called now? I don't even know what it's called.
Pete, I've lost track. It's changed.
Please, DC dot. And, oh, no, maybe it's Curry's this week. I don't know. Anyway, whatever it is, Dixon's car phone, whatever it is, they've obviously got the problem of carrying all those darn shops around, which is such an expense. And AO World has the advantage of not having to do that.
Yeah, Dixon's car phone warehouse, Pete.
DC dot, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a shame because I think, you know, Dixon's Carphone is a good company from a customer point of view. You know, I bought my laptop from them, and, you know, they're always helpful and all the rest of it, and it's great that you can go to the shop. But the likes of AO World are just taking away their market, aren't they?
And this goes back to what we were saying before about, you know, bricks and mortar. You know, we're always going to need them. But if you're anchored by that and literally paying, you know... 40 pence in every pound to the landlord, then your margins are going to be so squeezed because you're having to pay rent on the properties that you've got to put your outlets into. If you don't have that and all you're doing is paying someone to hold that stock in the warehouse, which you don't own either, to then distribute out to other people, then you've got a vehicle there like Boohoo have, where you just distribute, sell. Your markets,
yeah.
You know, you can stack them high and still have a low margin and be making a lot of money.
It's the classic thing, isn't it? Online is, I mean, we've got so many examples. We've got obviously OTB, which I hold on the beach, which is again, you know, low cost, online only. You've got another one recently was Best of the Best, BOTB. That's that one that's absolutely jumped up because they've gone from having like raffles for cars, like competitions for cars and stuff in shopping centres. They've just gone to online only. And funnily enough, it brings me to another one that I spotted a couple of days ago. Do you know a company called Appreciate Group? APP?
Never heard of it, Pete.
Right. Well, that's an interesting one because you have heard of it.
Have they been? Because were they called something else before? Were they Pay or something?
It was Park Group, PKG.
Park Group. Okay.
So it was PKG that did the Christmas hampers and all the sort of like voucher schemes and things, yeah? Well, the interesting thing is, I don't hold it. I read about it this week, whatever, in the RNSs. They're going online only. So, you know, it's another one that could massively reduce its costs.
So virtual vouchers then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it shows how long I was in that stock some time ago, Pete, and then left it and never went back again.
As PKG?
As PKG, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, go back on those ones you were on, mate. Sorry, you were going through the winners.
So, yeah.
I sidetracked you.
You always sidetrack me, mate, but don't worry. So there's another one here, Pete, right? Tech stock again, right? Up plus 195%, right?
Wow.
BATM Advanced Communications, Pete.
Yeah.
Another stock, overseas stock, that's been poo-pooed by everybody, right?
That's BVC, isn't it?
BVC, because it's an Israeli-based company engaged in development, production, marketing, medical products and telecommunications. Now, cybersecurity, IP surveillance, blah, blah, blah. Everyone's dismissed it. It's had so many peaks and troughs. It's been around forever, this stock, .com times, and it's up, down, but this year it's on it. And they're also talking about getting involved in recent months, COVID space, the medtech COVID space. So that's what's helped boost their share price. Yeah?
It's one Simon Thompson covers in IC, in Investors Chronicle.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, he's done well on that.
So they. I mean, I was reading a couple of weeks back. They got into a partnership with what was it? A life sciences company, Pete, called Novamed, regarding their equipment design stuff. And they're looking to get into that space I talked about, where the government's going to look into home testing kits. You know, and if they get that, certification for that, and they get any contracts, boom, it's going to be off again at the races, mate. So another one really for folks to look at, despite the fact that they're up significantly. So look out for that.
Well, that's an interesting point, actually, because just because something's up significantly doesn't mean it can't go up significantly more. And I think one of the mistakes a lot of people make is they discover a new stock and then they look at it and they go, oh, it's already up 80%. I've missed the boat. Well, you might not have done. You still need to do your research and analyze it and value it and all the rest of it, because there still could be a lot of upside. And you often find that something that's got upward momentum keeps going. And, you know, it's often very silly to dismiss these things.
It is. I mean, an example of that, Pete, is a stock we spoke about before, CMCX. CMCCX.
CMCX. Yeah.
And that had a fantastic run year to date. And, you know,
the spread betting company, CMC.
CMC, yeah. Had a fantastic run.
And then results today.
Yeah, and it came out results today. And it moved up again.
It jumped loads, didn't it? Like 17% or something?
At one stage, it was up 20% today. I'm not sure where it closed. I'm just having a quick look now. Yeah, it went up 20% today. So it came out with results, and again, it already said the results are doing really, really well. a couple of months back. It went up to, it went from sub £2. Yeah.
Yeah.
Raced up to 280 plus. Then in the middle of, latter part of June, middle to the latter part of June, it dropped down to 260 ish.
Yeah.
And I think a couple of people bailed then, took profits, you know, good profits from £2 to 280 to 260.
Yeah, not bad.
It's not a good 30%. And now, you know, having sold out at 260, 280, the shares touched £3.40 today.
Cool.
Yeah, and this is taking the stock.
You'd have been gutted if you'd sold them, wouldn't you?
Well, the stock was one available at 135, and this goes back to my adage of having cash to buy bargains if and when you see them.
Yeah.
From 135, it's now at 339, so it's almost trebled in price in the space of 3 months, 3.5 months.
And, you know, I mean, I think it's the kind of company that probably can keep doing all right for a while. I wouldn't, if I held it, I might top slice it a bit, but I certainly wouldn't be selling.
Yeah.
I hold IGG, IG Index, which is the more sort of like staid and boring version of a spread betting company. But yeah. I'm very happy holding IGG. Great.
I mean, that's slow and steady, but these guys have just gone whoosh, 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 and they're now ahead of expectations. They've smashed expectations again. So, you know, those people that had any doubt that they were going to do well are now buying. And, you know, to be buying now at 340, that's quite brave, you know. But like you say, it's in that space where we talked about this before, Pete, you know, on the unfortunate situation we talked about the Robin Hood sort of traders. But people are at home, they're trading more, they're investing more. And one of the vehicles that they're using are CFDs and spread bets and so on and so forth. And CMC have done exceptionally well out of the people being at home, and they've generated a stupid amount of revenue, hence the share price has gone up nearly twofold over the past 3 months.
I think you've also had that classic recovery thing with CMC as well, because they went through a bad patch and they sort of like, you know, were a bit unloved. So if you get an unloved company that suddenly hits the sweet spot, you've got all that catching up to do where they were unloved, and you've got the potential growth and stuff that they're doing as well. So, you know, you get these massive rises.
And that is the beauty of research. This goes back to the pain that I have to go through each time when people go, what do you do for 120 hours? Why do you spend that much time doing it? I use this filter and I use that filter, and in half an hour, I found the stock that I want. You know, but the thing is, in doing that, you don't actually know the ins and outs and the minutiae of that company. So when things go wrong, or it dips 5% or it dips 10%, you're out. You're selling it. You're going, oh, I'm out. And then you see the stock go up 50% or 100% or 200%. And it's, oh, that's an ex-holding of mine. That's an ex-holding of mine. That's an ex-holding of mine. And I'm like, okay, so you're a long-term shareholder. How many stocks have you got that's an ex-holding of yours? Because if you were a long-term shareholder, you would know, you've researched the stock to become a long-term shareholder. So hold on to that stock. Unless things go really, really bad for that company, hold on. Because if you want to be holding it, the major results and investment returns that you're going to get are probably going to be generated after you've held it for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, or 10. You're not going to get a 10-bagger by holding it for 3 months or 3 years. Very, very and highly unlikely.
Well, that's what we always say. You're never going to get 2, 3, 4 baggers if you're always selling when you're 30% up.
No, you're not. You're not. So should we carry on the winners, Pete?
Yeah, I was thinking of something then, but it's completely slipped my mind. Isn't that typical?
No, not sorry. Maybe what you need is some drugs, Pete, but I won't. Not the drugs I want to talk about next.
Let's have some drugs.
Indivia, which has spun out of RB, Recognizer. Yeah?
INDV.
Yeah. A specialty pharmaceutical company engaged in development and manufacture of prescription drugs, opioid dependence business. It's had a lot of bad press, Pete. The boss has just walked. Scandal hit. Yeah, scandal. RB spent out a lot of money last year on this as well.
Did they have that Suboxone film or something?
That's the one. That's the one.
How do I know that? I mean, I'm so not interested in IMDb. It's a stock I've never done. But I know that weird thing for some strange reason.
Yeah, because it's been around, mate. It's been, you've heard it subliminally with all the different news that's going on. And they
paid, I guess that, that's it, isn't it?
Paid out a settlement last year of $1.4 billion, Pete. And this thing has not gone away. So the CEO's just walked, yeah? Right. And then the following day, basically pleaded guilty to charges regarding, you know, misrepresentation of the Suboxone film.
So he
could feel face jail, prison, depending on what happens with this. And
so this stuff is supposed to get people off opioid dependency, yeah?
Yes.
Because obviously you've got a huge problem all around the world, haven't you? People are addicted to painkillers.
Yeah.
Especially in America.
It's a replacement therapy. But what's been happening, Pete, is that people are becoming dependent on the actual therapy.
On Suboxone.
On Suboxone. And then abusing that.
Oh.
Are you with me?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, so he's facing personal charges at the minute, and it's going to be a long-going thing. We'll see what happens with it. But he's no longer part of that. But I'm sure it's going to come back to hit Indivia. But those shares, Pete, are up 108% in 6 months. So another winner there.
That's, I mean, to buy that, if you'd have bought that at the bottom and got, you know, well, if you bought it and then got the 108%, fair play to you, but my goodness, you were taking on some risk.
You sure were. You know what I mean? We can't avoid talking about AIM as much as we'd like to, because there are some good companies in AIM. Lots of great
companies. Lots of brilliant companies on AIM.
Lots of great companies come out of AIM. Some of them even pay a dividend, and I've done exceptionally well out of AIM stocks, which I've held in the past. The two I'm going to talk about are extremely high risk, extremely volatile stocks, which have done exceptionally well in 6 months, and they're not even at their highs for the percentages I'm going to talk about where they're at right now. Right,
mate, can we just go back a second? Sorry to be a pain.
Go on.
What's your thoughts on INDV? Do you think there's more to come, or do you think it's all got a bit silly, or do you have any feel for it?
you know what, Pete, I think what it is that I look at the liabilities. And I look at the fact that RB have paid out $1.4 billion, and that should be it done and finished with. I look at the fact that the CEO's now going to be, you know, going through judicial process or whatever, what may have happened with him. But I don't think it's the end of the potential litigation for Indivia.
You think there could be more problems?
I could be completely wrong, and I hope for shareholders' sake that I am wrong. But you never know with these things what sort of, you know, caveats there are, or little strands of whatever where the litigators can pursue RB again or Indivia independently, you know. And then you ask the question, you know, is that one of the reasons why RB spun it out?
it does look that way, doesn't it?
I don't know, Pete. There's just a lot going on here. And for
where is it in terms of what they need to do to develop the drugs and stuff and all that kind of side of things? Is there much they need to do on that?
I've not looked into that far in the sense of what else is in their portfolio. I just wanted to just talk about
the percentage
it's done, the fact that it's got these couple of red flags over it, and for people to look at that and consider that as a stock as to what research they want to do. Because as with all these things, you know, there's far more stuff going on. It's like a swan. It's going up. It looks graceful. But underneath it, there's lots of paddling going on.
It's obviously very high risk, and it's a speculative play, isn't it?
It's very, very, very speculative. You know, it's so you've the low point, Pete. Yeah, it was at 32 pence ish, at 52 week low. That's back in Jan. Yeah.
Wow.
And now it's closed up at 91 pence. So that's a fair old run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just talk about these two stocks quickly, Pete, on good old AIM, And this is a game we talked about ages ago, folks, looking at COVID-19-related stocks. There could be some winners in there, just tread carefully, blah, blah, blah. And one of the stocks out there that's absolutely smashed it and made some people some serious money and some wealth is Avacta, ticker symbol AVCT. It's up 621%.
Wow.
And it's in the development side of a rapid antigen test for COVID-19. and the progress in its precision and Afirma-based cancer therapies. So it wants to get into this testing situation and diagnostics for COVID. And if, like I said to you before, the government's looking to privatise and subcontract out some of these testings and all the rest of it, this could be one of the companies that looks at all the antibodies and all the rest of it that could do exceptionally well out of it. That share price has been an absolute tear for the investors that have been involved in that. It's been up, it's been down. But right now, what did I say, Pete? 621%, yeah? It's gone from being a... Let's just have a quick look here. I've got the numbers somewhere. £0.12 per share is the low, Pete, in March, right? May the 27th, the share price hit £2.15. All on COVID noise, all on lots of people on Twitter and other platforms talking it up and so on and so forth. Obviously loss making, not making any profit. I don't know what the PE is. It's going to be something crazy. But the market cap's already nudging 296 million. Yeah. So 12 pence low, 215 high, currently priced at 131. Yeah. 1 year, yeah. 1 year change up 344%.
I see it jump 10% today. Well, I'm looking at the chart of it over, like, I don't know, I would say 4 months. It absolutely bulleted up. But since that, since it peaked out, it's been dropping back. I mean, it looks like maybe it is forming a base. Where is that? Around 100p? It looks like it might be sort of like finding support 100p, but it's obviously pretty risky.
It's very risky. It's got some news coming out in the next couple of months. And depending on what happens with that and whether they get some contracts, it could go off again. But, you know, it's one of them, folks. You're going to have to do your research on it and be very, very, very mindful.
And if it disappoints, then it's going to go to the floor.
Yeah, it's going to go to the floor. Yeah. Another one that's done exceptionally well in the last 6 months is Powerhouse Energy, ticker symbol PHE. That's up 618% in the 6 months when I looked earlier on today. And that's a company that focuses on exploiting and commercializing and rolling out newly developed waste-to-energy systems.
Yeah.
So it's almost on that hydrogen vibe again, yeah?
Okay.
So it's cleaning up and synthesizing gas composed primarily of hydrogen and carbon monoxide.
Is that 3.7 pence? Or is that euros or something? That's pence.
What are you looking at, Pete?
PHE. Am I looking at the wrong one on my phone?
No. You're looking at the right one, Pete. Look at the right one.
So it's 3.7 pence, yeah? Wow, that's a proper penny stock, mate. Yeah.
So that's moving up quite a lot.
Interesting, because that one's actually a much more interesting chart than AVCT. Because it's had that shooting up, you know, over... If you look at like a six-month chart, it did that thing where it shot up. But what it's done since that is it's pulled back, but it's actually been doing like a sideways consolidation. So that could be a bull flag before another push up. But it is, you know, it's illiquid, it's choppy, it's a small stock, so you've got to be careful.
Yep, you have to be careful.
But that's a much better looking chart than your Vactor one.
Yeah, but, you know, you've got a penny stock there, mate. You know, so you have to
be
very, very...
flipping risky.
You've got to be very careful, and it will move about like the wind.
Yeah.
You know, it's got market cap of nearly 75 million at the minute. You know, you're sub pennies, you know, and then it's gone from sub pennies to 4 pence, and it's certainly sitting at 3.7 pence.
Yeah.
So you have to be very, very careful with these stocks and do your research thoroughly and don't get caught up in the noise. I want to talk about this COVID stuff, Pete, because one of the things that's going on, and I want you to just be mindful of what you say when I say this, okay? Mm-hmm. And
I won't mention the Russians or the war.
Oh gosh. And be very considerate regarding our audience, Pete, okay? One of the things I was reading was the fact that all this COVID testing's going on. And one of the things that may go on going forward, because it speeds up us knowing where there are increased number of COVID infections, right? Is the government getting to the point where they test the sewage, right?
Oh, stop it.
And
by, it's getting worse.
I'm being serious.
This so must this, be the this, most the most on the edge podcast we've ever done.
And, you know, so just looking at tech, because what would happen, Pete, is that you'd be able to test this and give you results 10 days, maybe a fortnight ahead of other tests for larger areas and local authorities.
Well, it makes sense. It sort of makes sense. Yeah.
So that's what they're talking about. So it's talking about sewage-based coronavirus testing. Oh gosh. Let's move on.
yeah. That sort of hit me sideways, that one, mate.
Well, this is what's going on, mate. We've got to find ways to find the information as quickly as possible so we can get through this. Everyone's fed up of talking about COVID and being locked down. Everyone wants to get back to normality.
Oh, God,
but,
yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Pete, over to you, mate. I think I've covered enough stocks now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been talking for an hour, so I wouldn't mind covering this quickly. But something I did want to cover, if we got time, is what I've been doing with my hedging. Because I think there's some interesting lessons in it and stuff. For me, as much as anything.
Go for it.
So basically, what has been obvious is that the US doesn't seem to have much of a handle on its coronavirus infections and stuff. And it seems to be out of control again and just getting worse and worse. Now, obviously, there is a massive risk. Apart from the risk to life and stuff, which obviously isn't good, there's the risk that, you know, they could easily start locking down parts of the economy again, and that is already starting to happen. So I think that's a big risk for the markets, and that, you know, as we've had an incredible rally off the lows, and there has to come a time when people start to question that rally and think, is this really going to keep going? And maybe we're getting to that point, maybe we're not, I don't know. But anyway, that was the sort of fundamental backdrop that got me a little bit concerned. What then happened was last weekend I was looking at all my charts and stuff, and I was just seeing so many bearish signals on my charts. And the ones that stood out were bearish shooting star candles on the monthly chart. So that's the June candle was looking really bearish. You had bearish shooting stars on the weekly, pretty much for all the indexes. And you had loads of indexes that were looking like doing 13/21 day EMA, the exponential moving average, bear crosses. And you know, the S&P 500 was bang on a bear cross. And I sort of I jumped the gun, really. I think I screwed up, yeah? I jumped the gun, and I went short on the S&P 500. And it's easy with hindsight. It's so much easier. But so what I did was I shorted it in quite a big way. And that has hurt me this week because, obviously, we had those amazing US jobs numbers and the markets all shot up again. But what I did do was on Wednesday night, I sort of realized that something wasn't going my way. And so what I did was I quickly switched into the FTSE 100. It's all on my website on the trades page as usual. I switched to FTSE 100. And yesterday, what I was really worried about is I didn't want to be holding the S&P going into those jobs numbers. And that actually was a wise decision, I think. And it's interesting that the FTSE 100 jumped up yesterday, which obviously hurt me, but it's a hedge, remember. So overall, I actually made money yesterday. But today, the FTSE 100 is absolutely tanked. And I get a sense that the FTSE 100 is on a knife edge. It's either going to absolutely plunge or it's going to recover. But it's something's going to happen probably next week, I think. So I think it's going to be very interesting to look at the charts and see what they're telling us.
At the moment, Pete, we are struggling to get over that 6240, 6250 sort of number.
Yeah.
If we get through that, the next test of the FTSE is then 6-3, 3-3, that sort of area again.
Yeah.
But if we don't hold 6-1, 2-0,
yeah,
then we're heading back down again.
And then we're bringing 6,000,
yeah,
5,912, or whatever it is.
We're back into view again. So we need to watch that sort of area. We've been trading crossways now for about, where are we now? We're looking at middle of June, beginning of June, yeah?
Yeah.
So 15th of June, that number there is a close of 6,064-ish.
Yeah.
And then we've gone up to 6,300 plus. That's the range we've had now for since the middle of June to now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to go some... Until we get out of that range, and at the moment it's pointing downwards. We've had this 1.3% move today.
Yeah.
I think some of that is people closing off for the latter part of their 6 month, as in doing it at the end of the week. Yeah, are you with me?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The two quarters are finished, especially in June, but the end of the week is today, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
Some people are shutting down and thinking, oh, right, okay, that's the 2 months, two quarters done.
And of course, the US market was shut today as well.
The US market was shut, so we had no lead from that. And sometimes we're rudderless when the US markets aren't open. Sometimes we do well, but we never do as well when the US market's not open and the US market is not dragging us up, sort of thing. So I think, we've been a little bit like listless today. And some people have taken the opportunity to take some profits because you've got to remember they've had a rough 6 months, Pete. You know, we've gone from nearly 8,000 down to sub 5,000, the FTSE. But a bit of a rally up to 6,000, 6,500. Now we're at 6,113, whatever it is. So some people should, if they're feeling a bit adverse to take some profits, then, averse to risk should take some profits. You know, I mean, we've had this conversation before and lots of people were championing saying, we're having a V-shaped recovery. We're having a V-shaped. Look at this. It's smashed it. Oh, I'm so glad I held. You know, and didn't sell anything. Fantastic. Well done. Congratulations. But some people that had the cash and made moves and bought near the bottom have done 100%, 200%, 300% on certain stocks.
Oh, I've done really well, yeah.
Even people that just bought CMCX recently have done exceptionally well.
Yeah.
So if you're holding a stock and it's back to where it was in February or March, yeah, and you're back at break even on that stock, or you're up 5%, or it's hit an all-time high, have a think, what will happen to that stock if we go back down to 5,000 in the next 6 months? Yeah?
There's been a real sense that a lot of the higher risk stuff, so like FTSE 250 and AIM, has been weaker. And that's sort of a sign of a market that's getting a bit more risk averse. That has added to my sense that, you know, things aren't quite as strong as they were.
There is that, Pete, but I'd caveat that with the fact that, you know, you've got AIM, right, which has outperformed the FTSE and other indices because it's had the behemoths like Boohoo dragging it up as a larger cohort.
And obviously a lot of the gold miners and that have helped.
A lot of the gold miners have helped. So that's done exceptionally well. But for me, it's a case of look at your portfolio, look at what's performed really, really well in the past 3 months. Look at what you held in your portfolio throughout the year so far that hasn't yet recovered, and have a look at that company and think to yourself, why has it not followed the other stocks up? Because if it's not followed the stock up now in the past 3 months, you have to challenge yourself and say, is it going to recover if these markets go down again? You know what, if the FTSE goes back up and the All Share goes back up to where it was in February of this year, that stock that you're holding might then start to, you know, get the wheels back on. But if it's in a sector like retail or engineering or whatever, where half the staff or the team are not going to go back, yeah, the contracts have been lost because the aeroplanes aren't flying as much as they were before, yeah, all these redundancies are going left, right and centre, and it's part of that supply chain where the company is making loads of people redundant, that company might not recover.
Yeah, well, you've got to look as to whether the companies are able to survive, haven't you?
Yeah, it's all about resilience, Pete. You've got to have a company that's going to be okay the next 6 months and the next 6 years, not the next six weeks.
One thing I wanted to mention about my hedge, which I think is a really important point. I mentioned hindsight bias. So it's like very easy for me to say now, oh, my shot didn't really work quite as I wanted it to, yeah. But that's hindsight bias. If it had gone the other way, I'd be now on here saying I'm the best trader there's ever been on earth.
Loads of them but, to repeat. We don't need one on the podcast, thank you.
Yeah, but the other interesting thing about it, I think there's an interesting angle here around confirmation bias. And I think what happened in the wheelie brain, which is a pretty primitive old thing, it's getting tired. It's had 55 years on the planet. It's getting pretty worn out. And I think what happened was I'd seen all the news and stuff about the virus getting worse in the US. I'd, you know, seen all the stuff about all the redundancies and whatever. I knew we'd had a good rally. I knew that as we get towards the end of summer, things could start getting less strong because that's the normal seasonal pattern. And, you know, we're coming into the dog days of summer. And you know, already my brain was thinking a bit on the bearish, I need to hedge side of things. I think I also then had a lot of confirmation bias from friends that I know, good friends who are good traders, good investors, whatever, giving me their thoughts. And a lot of them were bearish, you know, and that's confirmation bias. That's confirming my view, you know. And I think I sort of then started looking at the charts and was almost seeing what I wanted to see, not necessarily what I should have been seeing.
Yep.
And I think we've got hindsight bias here, so I've got to be careful. But I think the one thing where I jumped the gun was I should have waited for a clearer 1321 day EMA bear cross as well as the other signals. I think what happened was I looked at the other signals, saw that the 1321 was either crossing or about to cross, and I went early. And that's probably a mistake.
Yeah, you've nailed it there, Pete. I mean, this is the beauty of looking back and reflecting. And for those that are new to this, Pete and I talking about psychology, we've been talking about it for a long time. And confirmation bias is a tendency to interpret new evidence as confirmation of one's existing beliefs or theories. So if the more that we hear somebody else repeating what we're thinking and so on and so forth, we go, ha-ha, I'm right.
Mm.
Yeah. So for those that were bearish of the markets, yeah, they were there at 5,000. It's like, yeah, I'm right. We're going to go down to 4,000 next. We're going to go down to 3,500 after that. All they wanted was the market to confirm that they were right. And when the markets hit 5,200, 5,400, 6,000, they're still saying, I'm right. It's still going to go to 3,500. They will eventually be right. They could eventually be right. We don't know. But there's news and information out there that still confirms that they are right, and that's confirmation bias. And equally, when someone holds a stock all the way down to being 50, 60, 70% down, and then the stock recovers, they will equally say that they are right, because look at me, I was right to hold that stock all the way down there and back. But sometimes the stock will not recover, as I said to other people, into use a prime example of more recent tales. You know, it's been smashed, it's more or less gone now, you know, and lots of people have been averaging down, all the way down to where it is now, and I'm not sure if anyone's going to get any money out of that.
Mm.
So you have to be careful with the psychology and your emotions and having other people influence your thinking. And the beauty of what Pete's doing now is sharing with you his learning and the mistake. And he's, you know what? He's going to refine that, because only recently he did the same, a different sort of hedge, and he won, and he did exceptionally well on that, you know. But this time, as you said, Pete, you probably just went a tad early, mate. So it's what we call
I jumped the gun. The idea with the charts, and it comes back to what you were saying about when the market had dropped to whatever it was, 4,900, and that people were saying it's going to go to 3. You know, if you use the charts, they can give you a more objective view of what is really happening, especially that 1321 EMA. It's absolutely one of the best indicators there is. But it's interesting that even knowing that, even with that logical, rational thought that I just do what the charts tell me to do, I still manage to get my own silly bias into it and make a mistake. I mean, it's crazy, really.
it's Pete, it's not crazy. We're natural. We're naturally emotional beings. Mm. And we naturally feel more comfortable in group settings and social settings. So we're naturally getting influenced by other people in and around
groupthink.
Us.
Groupthink.
And groupthink. And yeah. It's not something which all of us are able to just distance ourselves from, because we want somebody else and other things to confirm our viewpoints.
Yeah.
We don't want to hear from other people telling us, Pete, you're wrong. You know what? You're wrong because of X, Y, and Z. And these are the reasons why. Yeah. How many times are you going to see that and go, actually, you're right? Very few times you're going to do that, Pete, because it doesn't relate to what you see.
Yeah. I think the other one with this is that I think in a way this annoys me more, because I would like to pride myself on my patience, but I think I was impatient, and that's another mistake. I should have been more cautious, should have been more patient, should have taken more time, but instead I jumped the gun.
Yeah, and in athletics, mate, I think you get two false starts and then you're thrown out of the competition.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So the beauty of it is, Pete, is that going forward, you know, you're 20-odd plus years in now, and you're still learning. And this is what I'm saying to everybody.
Oh, I'm still making mistakes. That's the most scary bit.
Pete and I are still learning. You know, I spent an inordinate amount of time researching a goal stop, right? You remember that one, Pete? Resolute SRG?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the prices now that I bought it.
But RSG, was it RSG?
RSG, sorry.
Yeah.
And I bought it at 44 pence and 50 pence, right? And then lost patience with it because I saw a few things going on and I thought, I'm never comfortable with holding miners. I'm out. And I ran out within, it was only a couple of months, if that. And I was out running away, right? So imagine at 44, yeah? And at 50, I bought in. So my average is in the middle there. It's now at 65 pence, Pete.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that was one of my little hedges. I was going to have a little gold miner in my little portfolio. Great, yeah. In and out, like, in like Flynn, right?
Yeah.
The stock's essentially 50% up from the lowest tranche that I bought. Yeah? I sold the combined tranche at a loss. So patience, folks. And Pete and I are still learning patience. Yeah? Not everybody on Twitter that tells you that they bought that stock, won on that stock, hold that stock, are telling you the truth. We are going to tell you the brutal, honest truth about the
wins, the mistakes. Yeah, well, it's no use if you don't you know, be truthful. It's just
absolutely.
Pointless.
Absolutely. And this is what it's about. You can't learn from people telling you BS on Twitter or other platforms. You'll learn from listening to people that are going to tell you the brutal, honest truth. Yeah?
And the obvious thing to remember with Twitter is the confirmation bias, because it can give you chronic confirmation bias.
It sure can. It sure can.
Mate, we better draw it to a close there soon, I think.
We better head. Ladies and gents, we're an hour and 17 minutes here. It's another mammoth one. We hope to speak to you, see some of you virtually at Mellow Virtual on Friday. Next Friday the 10th. Yeah? Wherever you are, consider buying a ticket to come to Mellow Virtual. There's lots of great companies to see and fund managers to listen to, and great presenters, traders, investors, fund managers are going to be there. Pete and I are going to be there doing a live Twin Pete session. If you're listening to this and you've enjoyed it, please subscribe on whichever platform you are listening to, whether you're on iTunes, Spotify, or Overcast, SoundCloud, and the others. Yeah? Subscribe to the Twin Pete's channel. You can find us on Twitter mainly. You're going to find us on Pete's platform. We're hoping to see you all in the next couple of weeks with a new podcast. This is podcast 26.
Yep.
I hope you've enjoyed it. Take care. God bless. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, everybody. See you later. Bye.
Stay safe. Wear a mask. Bye-bye, ladies and gents.
This Twin Pete's Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.